This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say, eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff. With real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
The general Chinese economy's growth is slowing down. But don't forget, the scale is so big. 6.6% growth last year. Guess what? It translates into the total GDP of Australia. This country is entering a phase of extremely important turning point that the younger generation, they have seen nothing else but economic growth. And this is the generation that is shaping fashion. This is the generation that has brought us to where we are now today.
Hi, this is Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO of The Business of Fashion. Welcome to the BOF podcast. This week, we're going back to Shanghai, where we recently held our third annual BOF China Summit. One gentleman that I've spoken to often on my visits to China is Andrew Wu, who's the group president for LVMH in Greater China. Andrew's knowledge of the Chinese fashion industry goes all the way back to 1993 when he returned to China from Canada, where he'd been studying and working for several years. Andrew was able to give us an excellent perspective into the psyche of consumers in China and to understand how this fast-changing market is changing the way consumers are approaching fashion and luxury goods. So here's Andrew Wu at the BOF China Summit in Shanghai. So Andrew, we were just having lunch and talking about a little bit about your esteemed career here in China as the group president of LVMH. But before we get started on the specific your specific expertise, I just thought you should share a little bit about your connection to Shanghai and China. You've spent time abroad in Canada, but you came back here in 1993 after having grown up here. So maybe just tell us a little bit about your personal background.
Well, probably not to waste too much time. I'm here very much for China, yeah. For BOF, and I'm also here more as a native of China and specifically a native of Shanghai, much more than an executive of LVMH. So yes, I think it's extraordinary transformation of the country and the city that I've personally witnessed since I came back in 1993. But it's a long period of change, and most people probably in this audience are more impressed by what happened in the last 5 or 10 years and probably less acquainted with what happened before. So without wasting time, maybe I would leave it there and then maybe we can...
But I would like to know, Andrew, like I think for those of us who might not be as familiar with the market as you are, what was the luxury market or the fashion market like here back in 1993? Can you just paint a picture for us?
Well, everybody probably was reading about China's 40 years of economic reform or open door policy that started in late 1978, but actually happening from the beginning of 1979. So this is actually literally the 40th year of change. So in the 80s, as people probably may recall, China was starting to change, but it was changing in terms of trying to become a manufacturing base, export industry, trying to learn from the little four dragons in Asia, build their economies based on export and all that. So that was the 80s, manufacturing, exporting, China being a place of cheap labor, very much. The 90s, especially I think the turning point, if I may, 1993, was the year that the Chinese consumer started to emerge in a very, very small way, little noticed by most people, but it was a very important starting point. I was sharing with people at lunchtime, and then in fact, most people probably do not recall that January 1st, 1994 was the moment that China abolished foreign exchange certificate, which was an alternative currency that allowed people to buy imported goods. Literally, actually, it was based on hard currency. So hardly anybody had access or use of hard currency. So until that moment, January 1st, 1994, imported goods, especially imported luxury goods, in those days probably was just referring to beauty, so cosmetics. It was not really open to real Chinese consumers per se, unless you had relatives with foreign currency or you have a special source of foreign currency. So that was a very good, a very important moment. And of course, the consumer base was very small in much of the 90s. And I think it started to probably build its base progressively towards the end of the 90s. But probably a moment of another turning was when China joined WTO, which was 2002. That was a moment, actually a year after, foreign companies, especially retail brands, like luxury brands, started to be able to acquire direct operating licenses. So that was another moment. And that was a moment of very great importance, because it was a moment to see the visibility of Chinese consumers to gain in volume. This started a second phase. And then, of course, we all know that probably around the Beijing Olympics or Shanghai Expo, the momentum of the Chinese consumers started to gain much, much more in volume. And more importantly, this is something I think we all need to keep in mind. Today, we are looking at the audience and the consumers. We're talking about young people. But the young people then was too young. And China came out of the Cultural Revolution, going through the 80s. It was a change that was gradual, but not so easy to translate into consumption or general affluence or taste, etc., etc. So we are talking about literally people who have been born since 1980 that has been a driving force of what we see today. Now, this is year 2019. This is actually... as I said, 40 years after. And very importantly, this is a moment, a very important turning point, because the Chinese population, 1.34 billion people, this is a turning point that people born since 1980 is beginning to be bigger, more than 50%, 51% this year, than people born in China before the economic reform. So you think about it. This country is entering a phase of extremely important turning point, that the younger generation in China, shaped by the economic reform, meaning since the birth of their time, they have seen nothing else but economic growth. And this is the generation that is shaping fashion. This is a generation that has brought us to where we are now today. And that's important because this is what I think what we can look forward to, because the China yesterday today is literally turning overwhelmingly into China today and tomorrow. So all this is to just categorically answer that question. Yeah. So there was a day, there was a period that actually was little noticed. Hardly anybody was paying attention. And you had the government department stores maybe learning about it. And you had department stores selling cosmetics maybe, and progressively moving into fashion. So what we probably may take for granted today actually did not exist at all. At all 25 years ago. And it's probably in that sense. So cannot imagine the contrast.
I'm interested, you speak about these, you know, everyone's talking about these Chinese millennial consumers, right? They're driving the growth in the industry, you know, more than any other consumer segment maybe. How and in what ways is their mindset different from their parents? You're saying that, you know, the ones that have been born since 1980, you know, they're reaching their late 30s or
39
you know,
years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, they're 39 years old.
Turning 40
so,
next year.
Yeah, their parents now, you know, they're. What is the biggest difference between the way they think about life and luxury and consumption versus their parents?
I think that probably need to divide it into different groups. The first wave would be represented by people who were born in 1980s,
yeah,
who are now pushing 40. So this would be considered the first wave. And the first wave probably would be represented by, I remember reading about it, there's a very famous Chinese writer by the name of Han Han. And he wrote in his blog article, I remember 2011 or 12, and he was reflecting on something, not deliberately on fashion, but he mentioned the word fashion did not exist to him in the Chinese vocabulary until 2000.
Really?
He said that. Of course, probably little noticed by most other people, but I was taken.
Right.
Because don't forget, I started working for Elvin Mitch in 1993 in China. So it was very obvious. The work that was being done in the 1990s was educational, preparing, but not necessarily translating into a force of influence until the people who were born in the 1980s turned into 20s, right? Or late 20s. Basically, it happened probably after the year 2000. That's why it's so interesting for Han Han to have mentioned that the word fashion did not exist in Chinese vocabulary until after that. So this was the first force. So this first force was interesting because as this generational segment moved on, don't forget now they are pushing 40, now you have a younger generation coming in, the generation segment who was born in 1990s, who are now in their 20s. So now a wave after wave of pushing. So now you see this situation whereby the first segment probably was so unmentored because their parents were from the Cultural Revolution, they could literally almost have nobody ahead of them. So whatever they were doing, they think they probably would doing everything right, but they were, don't forget, unmentored.
Right.
But then you now move to the next segment, the segment of generation who were born in the 1990s, and their parents probably currently are still working in their 50s or whatever, and many of them successful. So you have some mentoring, and then of course they are going to be pushed by people who were born in at the turn of the new century, which is actually now pushing 20. So you have this situation accelerating the change. So this educational element that used to be unmentored now is both mentored and stimulated by people who are younger. So that explains how the acceleration of the change that happens. Now, contrasting other countries or other nations, no country has a shortage of different generations. But the context of China is that because of the Cultural Revolution, because of the closed door situation for 30 years, this explosion, this pent-up demand, this passion that exists with the young people probably, to me, is unprecedented and unrivaled if you compare to other nations. If you look at Japan, obviously it's an aging population. It has at least 3-4 generations of consumers who are already, you know, with this. And if you look at Europe, look at America, the same. I think especially if you look at America, if we compare to China, we're talking about emerged middle class, yes. But if you're talking about the absolute number, it's similar. Maybe it's at minimum 120 million Chinese people, middle class. And therefore you say, well, it's like the US or like Japan. But no, because the Chinese middle class are very young.
Right.
Probably in their 20s and 30s, well, the average age of the Japanese middle class is probably 65.
Right.
And the American ones, yes, but they are not feeling that they are doing better than their grandparents or their parents. So therefore, the feeling, the positive feeling, has everything to do with this Chinese middle class, not just emerged, but almost purely young people. So that, I think, is probably the fundamental difference, the accelerated
state. That explains why every time I come here, it feels like everything's changing so quickly.
Yes.
In a market where the consumer is advancing at such a rapid pace, where the market context is changing so quickly, what do you advise people, like entrepreneurs? You know, we have entrepreneurs here from, you know, international markets. We have entrepreneurs here from China. How do you connect with a consumer in the context where the market is so fast?
I think the question is not how first, it's you do need to connect, because this is a country that the notion of B2C is relatively new. If you look at the country of China's change for the last 40 years, well, as I mentioned in the early 80s, you were talking about exporting. So that's not B2C. You're talking about B2B business. And B2B business is probably has dominated much of China's economic reform, mixed with also B2G, because you're selling to the government. Don't forget the GDP growth in China for a long time was driven by government investment, infrastructure, and all that. So this whole notion of B2C is so new that it's not automatically in Chinese entrepreneurs' mind. But things are changing. If you look at e-commerce, that's a B2C business. If you look at a lot of internet setups today, that's mostly B2C. So this B2C movement is new, but we also need to take care of that, not take for granted that it's already with our people or Chinese designers who are in it. I think there was at least a moment that you almost felt that some of the Chinese designers just wanted to win awards. But do they connect with the consumers? So therefore, you know, connecting with the consumers is a notion in China that should not be taken for granted. It's something that is happening. I see younger generation of Chinese designers more and more embracing it. And that's the right way to go about it. And this is so important, because unless you connect with the consumers, just having a design, something that could win awards, as you know, it doesn't necessarily make a business. And in the end, it's not an award-winning competition. It's the contest vis-a-vis the consumers. The consumers are the ultimate sort of judge and endorser and in fact, the force to make or break a concept or business. So I think that probably precedes the notion of how.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news?
All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? For me, I got a chef-grade range recently, and now I'm cooking new things every single night. Seriously, no cuisine is off limits. The point is, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. I can picture myself with a car full of groceries, cruising down the highway, soaking up the sun with the available dynamic sky panorama glass roof. Ugh, pure bliss. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
How? Okay, so now tell us how.
I would not be right to pretend that I know how. Okay. I think the how is in the game of engagement, and actually there's no right answer, one right answer for everyone. There's nothing wrong if a Chinese designer wants to design and win non-Chinese audience. Nothing wrong if you make it work. So that's one way you could be a Chinese designer and become a very big force in America or in Europe or anywhere. So not necessarily there's a defined consumer that you have to go after, but you have to go after someone, not just winning an award. So with that, then it becomes the how goes into where. So if you look at China, are you looking at Shanghai area? Or you're looking at Mongolia? Are you looking at Beijing area? So there's a lot of differences, I think, even within China. You could connect with someone and not connect with the others. So I think that's very important. But the key is you need to connect. You need to connect with consumers. Large, big, small, it's different because for maybe investors, that people like to see scalability and immediately you serve a billion Chinese consumers. If you could do it, it's all good. But that doesn't mean there's anything wrong if you're connecting with 200 consumers or 2,000 consumers or 200,000 consumers. Look at Shanghai. It's a city of 25 million people. So a 25 million population city is the size of Australia, the size of Canada.
Yeah,
it's the size of bigger than many European countries. So nothing wrong with that. And if you look at, again, more specifically, the greater Shanghai area, this is an incredibly affluent neighborhood, if you may. Within 1 hour, you get to Hangzhou, which is another mega city. Within 1.5 hours, probably you reach Nanjing and et cetera. So this is really something that you really need to
specifically look at rather than just look at China as if it's just a uniformed market. And of course, we know the general Chinese economy's growth is slowing down. Last year was at 6.6%, the slowest probably that we can remember. But don't forget, the scale is so big. 6.6% growth last year. Guess what? It translates into the total GDP of Australia. So China grew and Australia in one year. So that's something to think about, the scale. And of course, this year, at minimum, China is going to grow probably 6%. Yeah, but that's another something, perhaps another Australia, right? So, and also consumption. I know that many people talk about last year, probably the general consumption is the slowest, growing at a single digit at probably 9%. But you know that the scale of consumption in China that is so big, 9% growth, the absolute amount of growth or the absolute amount of growth is literally equal to the whole consumption about 10 years ago of China, 1998 or something. So this is huge. Yeah. So we are talking about a market that is differentiated growth now. Yeah, you will be lucky if you are carried by the general growth, but there's nothing wrong when the general growth is slowing down, but you can grow triple or quadruple digit. So I think that also is important. So not one approach, but you need to be obviously very, very focused on connecting with the consumers, and you find the right vehicles, right distributions. There's more and more choices: the e-commerce, the traditional, or the merge, the O2O, etc. And there are so many tools. In many cases, much more advanced in many parts of the world.
Yeah, one of the things I did want to touch upon was the role of technology in this kind of connection or going after these market opportunities. I mean, for those of us from the West, when we're here and we download WeChat on our phone and we see just everything that WeChat can do, because WeChat's kind of like, a combination of Apple Pay, Facebook, Instagram. Like, it's like everything combined. And in the West now, Mark Zuckerberg says that he's consolidating the messaging of WhatsApp and Instagram. And they're trying to catch up with the technology here.
Yes.
What, and you sit in a very interesting position, as part of this, large global group. When you see technology in this country, how is that changing the market here? The way big brands or small brands go after the market opportunity? Because clearly when you have things like WeChat, it's a game changer.
Yes, I think I'm not a technology person, so I cannot comment on technology, but I can say one thing. People probably far away, or people even living in the environment, or become acutely aware of the air pollution and the smog and all those, all of which is true. But technology has become the new air in China. So you are literally living in an environment that technology is the new air. So you cannot avoid it. You are breathing this and it become part of you. And I don't think anybody operating in China can either refuse or pretend that it's not there. So you are really sort of breathing it and see it as part of the ecosystem. And this is already becoming very much an integrated sort of ecosystem, a part of that gathers the attraction or the attention of the consumers. So again, it's all about connecting. How do you connect with the consumers without the technology that is already being embraced by everyone, because it has everything to do with the fact that China is driven by this movement of youth, and therefore it adapts and adopts new things, adapts to and adopts new things faster, more readily, probably than other places. Plus, there's this passionate component. Mm-hmm. So it's really not something that I can specifically comment, but without any doubt, it's really becoming the air that we breathe.
Mm. We're almost out of time. Before we conclude, and you mentioned this earlier, which is that, you know, there's not a single type of Chinese consumer, right? There's, well, what do you, if you were going to advise the people here in this group, you know, what is the single most misunderstood thing about reaching and connecting with the Chinese consumer? What advice do you, would you give to people to kind of overcome in their mindsets about the consumers here in China?
I think to be able to connect with the Chinese consumer, you really need to pay a lot of attention to the changes that are happening in China that probably are underlying the behavior or the, you know, the motivating the people, how they behave. So you cannot just look at the person. There are plenty of overseas Chinese that you can look at and say, okay, so you are Chinese, I assume. By looking at you, I understand. Yeah, but that's not in the right context. Right. Sometimes the Chinese people overseas present one view or the other of the Chinese, all true, but not necessarily sufficient for you to understand. Hong Kong sits next to mainland China, as close as any other location could, or the closest. Hong Kong sees probably 50 million mainland Chinese visits a year. Probably contribute probably hugely to Hong Kong's retail more than any other forces. But does Hong Kong understand mainland Chinese by looking at the people in on Canton Road? Do they understand enough? And I would say not just by looking at them on Canton Road. I would say that's not sufficient. Because even when you see a lot of Chinese, well, they behave differently when they are on Canton Road. And you probably don't know where they come from, what motivates them to buy, and you cannot really do much if they don't come, and there's not much you can drag them. So therefore, by looking at just at the Chinese is not sufficient. So therefore, how? I think the danger, what you, I cannot say what is right, I can say what is wrong. You should not just take the easy way and say, oh, I just recruit two Chinese students who are studying there. So I assume they represent the whole of China.
Yeah.
Be careful, because those two Chinese may be very poor in Chinese and they learn English and they may not speak even as good Chinese, or at least they may not write Chinese as well. So you really need to have a much more humble and more open-minded approach how you are going to understand the Chinese, rather than just to take it easy. Last year, the biggest Hollywood movie about Chinese was Crazy Rich Asians. Mm-hmm. Very big, but very small. Flopped in China. Did you know that?
Why?
Because it's not Chinese. It's Singaporean Chinese.
Right.
Most mainland Chinese probably do not feel a real connection.
Right.
And in the movie, even when they attempted to speak Chinese, the mainland Chinese probably would laugh, because actually you can obviously tell they are ABCs or whatever. So all these little things are very telling, because if you're just far away, look at China thinking it's just, oh, you're Chinese, and you do things with good intention, sometimes it doesn't connect. Right. So I think we collectively, internationally, need to make a bigger effort to try to better understand the Chinese. And of course, it's also a very important period, or the starting part time, that China need to also help the world understand China better. So this is on the shoulder of all of us, especially Chinese who are maybe internationally minded or bilingual. So there's a lot of work to do. I think it's right. Both ways. It's not just one way.
Okay, well, thank you for educating us. I mean, you're doing a great job at building that bridge. And I think, you know, for me, one of the lessons is that you just have to come visit the market more.
Yes.
You know, like being present here. There's nothing like being on the ground here in China, talking to people, seeing what people are wearing, understanding what people are interested in culturally, what they're talking about in terms of what's going on in the world. The best way is to come here and talk to people like you. So thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this conversation, you might be interested in BOF Professional, our global membership community from the business of fashion. BOF professional members receive unlimited access to all of our articles, daily members-only analysis, the BOF professional iPhone app, biannual print issues, and all of our online education courses as part of your membership. For a limited time only, we are offering BOF podcast listeners an exclusive discount on an annual BOF professional membership. To get 25% off of your first year, click on the link in the episode notes, select the annual package, and enter the special invitation code podcast2019 at the checkout. We hope you enjoy it, and don't forget to tell your friends.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.